Hey, good morning, Eastern Oregon, and welcome to this April 23rd version of AM Live on EOA, your connection to Eastern Oregon, and we're on the EOA network. And here in just a bit, we're going to have Calvin Bennett and Isaac Insko, political guru students from EOU, going to be here with us and talking about everything EOU and politics.
My favorite.
So I know. I'm sure you can throw sports in there. They got injured playing softball yesterday. So there's sports in there somewhere. Nice. You had a puppy follow you to work today?
I did. Yeah, I was just walking down Adams, same way. Look in the glass, see something catches my eye. I turn around and there's this little puppy. Gabe put a picture of it up.
It's a little lab. A little baby. I haven't seen him yet.
Yeah, it looks like it's probably a mutt. It does have a lab in it, but I couldn't just leave him out there, so I turned around, walked back a couple blocks, was trying to see if anybody was out there looking for him, because, I mean, he's clean. He don't have no fleas or anything, nothing. So I just carried him here, and the girls next door have him, and they're just... We made a couple social media posts and trying to get him to his owner before animal control comes. Because, I mean, the lady at the sheriff's office said that the animal control guy, because the puppy's so young, will just put him in his truck and drive around and try to find the owner before they take him to the pound, because that'd be kind of scary for a little puppy like that.
You know? Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I left him with the girls over there. I came over here. I would start working. I go back over there to check on him, and I say something right when I walk in the door, and here he comes peeling right at me and sat right on my feet. Like, yeah, it's weird how dogs know. Like, he knows that I grabbed him off the cold street. And yeah, I couldn't leave him out there, though. No way. It's Adams. But that time of day, there's nobody out there.
Right,
you see the people at peak, and that's about it. You know what I mean? It's 5:45 or whatever. And it was just him. He must have, like, got out of somebody's yard or something. They got to live close to Adams because he couldn't have made it far.
Yeah.
So if it's your dog, message us and come get him.
He's here.
We don't know his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he is really cute. Yeah. He's very, or she, I don't know. I think it's a he. Hard to tell. I didn't really inspect it, you know. Like,
yeah.
I just kind of let him do his thing. But he was shivering, and I just kind of put him in my jacket, and we came to work.
What a cutie.
Thankfully, it wasn't a cat, because I don't know if I would have picked it up. I would have had a hard time.
Like a little
cats
kitten?
Cats scare me, man.
Not a cat, but like a little kitten?
I mean, if it was just a little baby, I'd probably have grabbed it. But, like, cats are just a different breed, you know? Yeah. They aren't the same.
Yeah.
But anyways, if that's your dog, get a hold of us. We're here. I'd love to see somebody get him before they even show up.
Yeah. All right. You want to do sports?
Let's do it.
All right.
AM Sports Report brought to you by Rockin' Sons Tire and Auto. Go check them out. Anything that you need done to your car, they can probably do. From tires, oil changes, whatever. Go see JB and the boys. LHS softball split this weekend with Pendleton at home. They lost the first game 7-9, but they came back and won the second game 11-9. Right now, they're currently tied for first place with Pendleton in the GOL. With that split right there, I mean, I don't know exactly who has the top spot based on tiebreaker, but the Tigers play again this Friday at home versus Baker. 2:00 and 4:00. The boys games versus Pendleton were canceled. I'm not exactly sure why. If I get that info, I'll get it to you, but they're going to be rescheduled. The boys also play this Friday at home versus Baker at 2 and 4, which they should really stagger those in my eyes, but they don't listen to me. So, EOU baseball split a doubleheader in Ellensburg this weekend versus Central Washington. They lost the first game 1-9, but they came back in the second game and won that 11-9. They play at 6:00 today in Walla Walla versus Whitman. EOU track and field hosted the multi-championships this last Thursday and Friday. TJ Davis ran his first multi of the year, and man, he did not disappoint. He came out, posted the highest score in the NAIA this year in the decathlon, just under 7,000. I mean, if he stays healthy, he wins another national championship. There's no question about that. No question about that at all. Israel Miles finished second and is sitting eighth in the nation. On the women's side, Liz Grandel finished second and broke the school record in the HEP, which has stood for 35 years. That's pretty impressive. EOU currently has 8 women ranked in the top 16 in the nation in the heptathlon, and 3 out of the 4 of them are in the top 4. I mean, it's crazy how good the multis are for EOU right now. It's very exciting. There was more EOU track happenings. We'll talk more about that on Thursday. For his effort, TJ Davis was named CCC Track Athlete of the Week. Speaking of CCC Players of the Week, Kylie Parsons was given that honor for the first time this year. She's number 2 pitcher for EOU, but it's crazy because they're both really good, the 2 pitchers for EOU. She picked up 3 wins this weekend, pitching 11 and a third innings, giving up 0 runs and striking out 17. The softball team's destiny is in their own hands. They're currently tied. They have the tiebreaker, so they're first in the CCC. They're 21-3, and they go to Southern this weekend. And if they win out, they're CCC champs. If they win out, they're the champions in the toughest conference in the country by far. I mean, you have 3 teams in the top 11, 4 in the top 20, and just a conference that's won the last 3 national championships. It's a dominant conference for softball, and EOU's right on the verge of winning that conference, which is awesome. I mean, it's super awesome. The games versus Bushnell this weekend, it was senior day, and they swept all 4. I mean, they had a walk-off in the bottom of the 7th. It was it was quite amazing. They were down 1-0, and Kelly Monahan comes up, runners on first and second, and hits a double in the gap, and both runners score, and EOU walks it off to win game 2. And so they end up sweeping all 4 games this weekend, which was huge. I mean, the 3 conference games are the important ones, but right now with the way rankings are, you want to win all 4. And it used to be you'd play the first 3, and then the 4th game, it was kind of like a float game where you play your backup players or throw pitchers that don't pitch very often. But because of the way the rankings are and how tight everything is in the CCC, you can't even afford to lose a non-con game. That's the AM Sports Report brought to you by Rockin' Sons Tire and Auto. Go see JB and the boys.
All right. Let's take a look at the weather outside.
Well, it's cold.
That's not current.
No. Yeah, spinning screen.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the weather graphic.
It was cold this morning.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And so 70 to today, down to 36. And then it's going to be, I guess, the rest of the week.
Maybe
cool over the weekend. Yeah.
And rainy. Ugh. Go away.
Yep. So.
Yeah.
Kind of how it is.
Yeah. That's weird. Isn't it weird how weird things happen? Like, where did that dog come from? I'm bebopping down the road, and all of a sudden, it's just behind me.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. Like, I wasn't, like, at a crosswalk or anything. I was in the middle. I was, like, just past peak.
Yeah.
And one of the girls I know comes out of peak, and I was like, look at this. And she's like, oh, is that yours? I said, no. I was like, I thought it might be yours. I don't need that kind of responsibility in my life. It's a little bit much. You got to, like, feed those things. Yeah. I've already done that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. You with the dog, that would be an interesting.
I've had dogs. So I just haven't been able to get another one since my last one died because it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because I had her from the time she was 8 weeks old until she was 11. And that's about the life expectancy of a old English bulldog.
No,
she was awesome.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I got a dog after my dad passed in 2012, and he died.
I don't like that they died before us, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I need a turtle or something that's going to live like 100 years. My kids used to have sulcatas, and that was kind of the idea. Hopefully they outlive me, so I don't have to see them die.
But. Yeah. What birds? It's like some of a cockatoo.
Yeah, but they only live like 30 years.
No, there are birds that are live like 70 years old or something like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hopefully
but
you
yeah.
live. Yeah.
Anyhow.
I'm moving to turtles if I get something. For sure. There's Galapagos turtles that have been alive since Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
All righty. Well, when we come back, we'll be with Calvin and Isaac right after this.
Here in Eastern Oregon, we're blessed to live in such a wonderful area. And though it may seem mild-mannered, there's actually quite a lot that goes on in this area. And apparently, there's two dinguses who happen to be here that are actually crazy enough to get up at the crack of dawn to talk about it. Tune in to AM Live on EOA with Brent and Dodzy, featuring special guests, weather, sports, news, and more, every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m., only on EOA Live, your connection to Eastern Oregon, now on Roku.
Okay, we're live during the bumper here coming up. We're live now. All right. Hey, glad you guys are here. This is Isaac Insko. We're going to go to that other camera. Isaac Insko and Calvin Bennett. Glad you guys are here today. How are you, man?
Doing good. Been busy.
Yeah.
Staying
you guys
busy,
lose but... a dog by any chance?
Nope. Luckily, no.
Nope, but I do think the studio needs a dog. I don't know what name. I'm just pushing for that.
Yeah, the studio
but, okay.
needs a...
We would have to up our responsibility level a little bit around here before we could have a dog.
Yeah.
Oh, but think about it. Guests could walk in. There'd be a nice little puppy there.
We used to do the thing with Blue Mountain Humane where we brought a dog in.
Yeah.
A cat once a week and tried to get it adopted. And that's good for me. Like, just... you can visit. It's like... being a grandpa, you know, like you can visit, but you ain't staying.
Yeah, no, I had an employee who was softly working his way into having a comfort dog that he needed to bring to work. It's like, there, that's not gonna work, man. That's not happening. You know, like, yeah. So, I mean, I love pets. And love them dearly, but yeah. So, all right. Well, hey. So here we are.
Yeah.
So you guys have been okay. So let's just start. Isaac, you were born here. I mean, Were you born in LeGrand?
Yeah, I was born here, right up at the Grand Ronde Hospital.
Okay.
There, I've been here my entire life.
Yeah. And your parents' farm.
Yep.
Okay. And Calvin, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you grew up in
Mitchell. Mitchell. Yeah, Metropolis of Mitchell is what I call it. Good old about 100 people there.
Okay.
Graduated in a class of 2.
All right.
But it was during 2020, the best year ever, and we had a dropout rate of 50%, so there's supposed to be 4 of us.
Oh, wait, you graduated in 2020?
In 2020, yeah.
Okay.
That's when I graduated. But that 50% dropout rate, not cool, but at least I was valedictorian. So. Yeah.
All right. And so, and both of you, I mean, the thing that's interesting, the when you came onto our radar is that you guys both have an interest in politics.
I know, we're crazy.
I know. So that, I mean, I don't, I guess, yeah, it's like, why would 20-year-olds care about politics? I mean, that just seems as far from, I don't know. Isaac, let's start with you. When was the first time that really became something that was on your radar?
Yeah, for me, it really started in 2016 when we had that presidential election. I don't know what it was. It was just all over the media, and I started watching it. I was 14 at the time, and I remember I was watching the news in my bedroom instead of watching cartoons, and my parents walked in one night, and my dad's like, "Are you feeling okay? I'm like, "I don't know what it is, Dad. I just love looking at all these numbers and everything and looking at polling data. I don't know. I just find it super interesting." And election night's always just so exciting because you get to you get to predict those numbers. And
okay, yeah. So there's the oxymoron right there. Like, election night is so exciting. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
I don't know what it is. You know, it's just it's a niche that I just can't get over. And
yeah,
I don't know what it is, It's just so fun.
That's probably.
I know candidates are probably watching. Like, what is wrong with him? I can't stand.
Well, yeah, that's probably how Kyle feels sometimes about like the draft, right? It's like,
the draft is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. What,
2 weeks away for that.
But yeah, no, the NFL draft.
Yeah,
it's coming up like a couple days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Jeez, you aren't up to date on that. Yeah.
But not about politics.
Yeah. No. But So that's super super unique. Yeah. So yeah. Calvin, when did you first start getting involved?
So the first memory I have of politics was actually in first grade, and we had a mock election where I was actually born up in Fairbanks, Alaska. We had a mock election in our school, and I looked at the slips of who we're going to vote for, and it was like you put a blue slip in for Obama or you put a red slip in for McCain, and I was like, oh, I like blue, so I put that one in there. So that's my first memory of it, but that's not what got me into it. Similar to Isaac, 2016 was a very interesting time. I had a lot of thoughts on that time period. But since then, coming to college and kind of being around the state more and really exploring the beautiful state that I call home, which is Oregon, I've been like, there's a lot of problems here. Yeah. And what's the best way to fix that? And I think a lot of the problems are just, sometimes you just need to go to Salem and fix things or work on things in the local level, city, county, and stuff. I think LeGrand's doing great, but there's definitely other parts of the state that need work, and I feel like I'm one of the best people to help fix that in the future. So that's why I've been getting involved.
So how did you get to EOU?
Well, so like I said, I graduated in 2020, right? I had a lot of different plans for where I was going to go. I was thinking like, oh, maybe back east, go to D.C. I was really big into shooting sports, so Texas A&M and Clemson were on the radar. And then the pandemic hit, and I was like, well, I don't know what's going on here. I had that feeling that a lot of other people had, and I was like, what's coming up in the future? So maybe I'll stay local. I'm going to go to a small town. I'm going to come to LeGrand. It was only about 3 hours away from home, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made because I graduated from that class of two. So very small classrooms.
Right.
I think it would have been terrible to go to somewhere else that had like a 400 people auditorium, like a 400 people in a class.
And yeah.
You never even know your professor.
Yeah.
Because they're just they're speaking in a different classroom.
Right.
And there's just a aux cord going into that auditorium with their voice in it so that they can do two at the same time.
That really happens?
Yes, that really happens.
There's like no visual of a professor in the classroom?
There'll be a couple TAs in that second classroom.
Did they have a video
screen? A lot
screen?
Of times they put a video screen.
I was going to say, yeah. So you, yeah. But no, that would be.
But still, like.
No, that's weird. Yeah, I mean, there's not much difference between that and an online professor.
Exactly.
Right.
And so I'd much rather have the in-person experience. That's why Eastern's great.
Yeah.
I mean, average class size of 17, that's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I just received a text message from my uncle, who's the president of time, and said, your application's ready to go. So I was like, perfect.
Yes. So there wasn't much considering.
I was hoping that you would get a little bit of a discount for him being there, and I get there, and he goes, no, you don't get a discount. No special treatment. I'm like, well, then why did I apply?
You know? Yeah. So your uncle was Tom, who was the president for seven or eight years.
Yeah.
And so.
And then he left. After my freshman year, I'm like, was I that bad?
Yeah, is it personal?
Yeah, I know. And he goes, no. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, that's super interesting. So then when did you guys, how did you guys meet? I mean, we were talking about a little bit about that story off air.
So in the freshman dorms, Calvin was an RA, but he wasn't my floor RA. He was right below us. Mm-hmm. And my roommates and I, we were kind of loud. I'll admit that. And Calvin had to come up almost every night and go, hey, it's past midnight. Could you guys quiet down up there? And we didn't like Calvin for a little while because he kept telling us to be quiet. But eventually he and I got involved in some clubs together and started talking. And then the first big campaign or political event we did was the commissioner debate back in October of, I think, 22.
Right.
And ever since then, we've just been together. We lobby in Salem together for the university, and we're both been in student government for the past, he's been there for 2 years, I've been there for three, but.
So let's go back to the commissioner debate, because that was the first one thing that we did together, that you guys did with EO Alive, and that was, I mean, that was a big challenge. That was Paul was running against
Lisa Hill.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it was just the two of them running against Commissioner versus nine right now.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Yeah. And so, and I remember you guys putting that together and how, I mean, I think we weren't involved in it. We just streamed it. And then But no, so what kind of pushed you to do that kind of a thing? That's a big undertaking for a couple of college kids.
Yeah. What I noticed as someone who had been living here for the last 2 years is I was like, I don't know what's going on in our local elections, and I want to figure out what's going on. I knew a little bit about Paul because he was the incumbent, and I knew nothing about Lisa Hill. And I was like, as an individual, I want this to happen. So I'm like, you know what? If I want it to happen, there are other people in this community who want to know what's going on. They want to have a place where they can go find an accessible debate, watch it, and learn about these candidates and see who's going to be representing them for the next 4 years on the county level.
Yeah.
And so we saw a need and we filled it.
Yeah. But and for us, we wanted to get more people on campus too. And that's kind of why Tim Seidel's office is, shout out to his office, they've been funding the AV equipment and everything for those debates. And the reason they do is because we bring community members onto campus and kind of, and students as well. What was really great about the most recent one we had is, while we were also providing a service to the community to meet their candidates, we were also providing students with free food because food insecurity is a huge thing on campus. So Calvin and I kind of killed two birds with one stone with that one. And compared to the one we had now, compared to the commissioner debate, I had a lot of people tell us that was so much better than the commissioner debate. And I'm like, dang, I thought the commissioner debate was perfect. And now people are telling me this was so much better. And I'm like, dang. But hey, that's a good thing.
But you did the commissioner debate, and then the following year, 2 years ago, you did the city council one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, there are four candidates, four or five. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. There were four different positions.
There were three city council positions.
That's
and the mayor.
Right.
And then there was two people running for each city council position.
That's right.
That was contested. There's a fourth one that there's only one candidate.
So there were six people though. There were six.
I think there were eight.
There was two for mayor, and then another seven for county commissioner. So there was eight.
Got it.
And it's like that every 2 years. There's always three seats in the mayor open every two years.
Right.
In LaGrange.
And so, and they were all contested.
Yes.
Except one of the positions, right?
Except one, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that was intense.
Yes.
I mean, I have my thoughts, but why was that? Why were those races so the way they ended up being? You have a sense?
I mean,
we were just coming out of COVID.
Yeah, we were just coming out of COVID. I think candidates were just very passionate about their positions, and some candidates more than others. And the structure was not my favorite. I wasn't happy with the structure that kind of got pushed through, but that's part of the reason why I think also it's just so many candidates, and Calvin and I are kind of used to having like two or four when it comes to a debate, because then you can put more questions and you can have more time, and it's less effort to get a camera on all of them. And that one, I thought we did a good job with the structure we had, but it wasn't my favorite.
So what about the structure of that? How was it structured?
Yeah, it was.
And what is your preference?
We did that one was each candidate just got to come up and say something. It was more of a forum style, which I like, but I think debate styles are more entertaining for the viewers to watch because you get more of a conversation between each candidate and they get an opportunity to kind of point out the flaws the other one might have, but then be able to back it up, because, you get those situations where one candidate or their campaign team is talking about a flaw you might have on their Facebook page and voters see it, and then that candidate has the opportunity to come and address that issue in front of everyone. So that's kind of why I like that structure more. And with eight people, you can only ask like four questions, and we've already gone through an hour, and with two or four people, you can get like 16 questions in an hour, which is nice.
Well, and we did, what's the seat that Benz is in? Is that 51?
Cliff Benz. That's Congressional District 2, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so during COVID, there were 15 candidates that were running for that seat. And
did you win each one?
Well, what we did was, I think there were eight Democrat and seven Republican, or the opposite, different way. And so then we had, and we worked with EO Media Group, who owns The Observer and the other newspapers in the area. And we did a virtual forum. I don't know if you guys were, we did a virtual forum here, had people on the stage, and they did it. But and one night we did the Republicans, and then the next night we did the Democrats, and everybody was virtual except the people in the studio.
Okay.
And that was a frickin' jungle. It really was. Yeah.
Hosting debates is hard. Going back to your earlier question, though, of why there were so many candidates and why it was so heated, I think we have to put ourselves back to 2 years ago.
Right.
Think about the issues of the day. So we were just coming out of COVID, like you said. But there's also something else that happened on the state level, which was Prop Measure 110, which essentially decriminalized drugs in the state, hard drugs, narcotics. And that was something that was really big, because what we were seeing was a spike in homelessness and other health issues, community health issues, because of that, that were spiking. And people in LeGrand were like, we see this happening on the west side of the state. Let's make sure it doesn't happen here.
Yeah, I don't, and I don't remember them that we really had enough results of Measure 110.
Yeah.
I mean, people were definitely upset about COVID. They, you know, and that was part of what was, and specifically the COVID restrictions and how it had affected Eastern Oregon. Mm-hmm. That was definitely a driver. You know, we were just at the very beginning of the negative effects of Measure 110. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I mean, the riots in Portland, the increased homelessness, I mean, all of that stuff was just like this gigantic swell.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we can't forget about the local roads.
Yeah.
I went back and watched that debate recently, and the two things that I mentioned the most were the roads and stuff regarding that, so like snow plowing, of course. And then Measure 110 were the two biggest things mentioned during the debate.
Huh. Okay.
110 was the most mentioned during the debate?
It was mentioned a lot.
It was crazy because it wasn't even.
Well, and I'm trying to think, was that the year that it was passed so people were talking against it, or it had been already passed in?
I believe it was 2020 when it was passed. So the debate was in 2022.
Oh, okay.
So it was in effect for 2 years.
Okay. So we were So. Mm-hmm. So there were certainly a lot of heated elements in that. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, both in the city council race and also in the commissioner race, is they're nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. But partisan issues emerge. I mean, there's very few issues. Yeah. I mean, I've been watching the city council. I've been recording the city councils for, you know, the LeGrand City Council for 14, 15 years. And I've never seen one decision that divided along party lines. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just they're not that issue. But during the campaign season, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
On like nonpartisan?
Nonpartisan, positions becoming incredibly partisan.
One thing I'd say off the top of my mind is it's how people think. A lot of people. So, I mean, while they might not necessarily be partisan, they still might think of stuff in a certain way. So if you're conservative, you think about how you like small government, less regulation. If you're more progressive, you kind of like bigger government, helping people out. And so some of those base core values, your morals and ethics, could influence you being, even if you're in a nonpartisan position, it still influences who you are.
So. Right, but how does that apply? In a practical, can you see any way in a practical sense that that would apply locally?
That like a nonpartisan race would make it so it's just for the greater good? Or like are you saying it, how nonpartisan?
So let's say, so you take the city council and there's a mixture of conservative and and liberal on the city council. Can you see any issues, I mean, like roads, for instance? There's nothing partisan about a road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or... So what issues can you imagine locally that might be better served left to right? I don't know.
I think that's really up to the voter at that point. You know, because you might have, I'm just going to use a general one, taxes. Like Republicans tend to want to tax less, Democrats tend to want to tax a little more. Republicans like to spend less, Democrats might like to spend more. And so things like that, or it could be certain ag policies or climate policies or certain social services that the city might provide that someone right might not be a fan of or be a fan of, or someone left might not be a fan of or be a fan of. So I could see where it is. And when it comes to nonpartisan races, the only really difference I see between a nonpartisan race and a party race is you're all just on the same ballot. Right. you know, I'm like, the campaigning, in my opinion, doesn't change at all. You're still, people who have conservative values will advocate for their conservative values, and people with liberal values are going to advocate for the liberal values because those are the voter groups they're pulling from. And so I think nonpartisan races are fine, but my only really thing I see change is, instead of having one group of Republicans and Democrats, it just puts you all on the same ballot.
Yeah, well, and I think that candidates try and differentiate themselves based on some of those issues, mm-hmm. whether they, you know, I mean, where I think we see that a little bit, you know, we see that a little bit in the commissioner race. I mean, out of nine people, you're trying to make yourself look a little bit different some mm-hmm. any way you can. And sometimes that is in a partisan manner. So, mm-hmm. well, here's a question that I think that you guys are qualified to answer is that do you think as younger people you're able to think outside of your party easier?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Calvin and I would both agree we cannot stand some of the older leadership in both parties. And both parties do a horrible job at bringing young people in, because just how generations work, my views are very different from the party that I'm a part of, its leaders. They're very different. And some older members of my party will be like, oh, you're leaning that way. I'm like, well, no. And you know, I'm like, that's not how it works. But I definitely think there needs to be some more youth in both parties, because I'm going to use this word. Young people tend to be a little more progressive towards different ideas than my parents, my grandparents. And yeah, no, I don't always agree.
But is that progressive politically, or just progressive in,
I think it's
able
more,
to think outside?
I think it's being able to think outside, especially, okay. and more socially. I think young people nowadays are much more accepting of differences of opinion. And even though most media will say we're the least acceptive, I think we're the most acceptive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Calvin?
Very open-minded. Yeah, I totally agree with everything Isaac said. A little story I have for the debate. My mom and my sister came up, and my mom was talking about how my sister's had done nothing in politics. She's not interested at all. But every time something came up that she didn't know, so like they kept mentioning the cat tax, which is cap and trade, my sister, like any terms that she didn't know, she was looking up and then like fact checking what these are, and then using that to essentially help make up her mind. And that's something that I see a lot in our generation, is these cell phones we have in our pockets, these boxes of knowledge.
People are defined, yeah. Mm-hmm.
People are being able to be like, oh, you said something? Let me check and see if that's true, or let me see and make my own opinion on that. And they're able to do it like that.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think young people are going to do a lot, is just that quick fact-checking and being able to know what's going on. Because you can throw jargon at them, like the cat tax, and they can turn around and be like, what is that? Look it up and know about it instantly.
Yeah. And it's cap tax.
Oh, cap. Sorry, I
right?
keep saying, my bad.
No, I know. I was, for a minute, I was confused. Yeah,
well, I think cat is cat, or cap and trade.
Oh, okay. And yeah, so got it. Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so cap and trade, yeah.
Okay, so it is cat tax, but that stands for cap and trade.
Right. It's I just thought of that. The branding, that's a little odd. There's cap and then cat.
Yeah. No,
I don't
no.
know, guys.
He talks about the cell phone, you know, being part of, I don't know if I would trade my social awareness and aptitude for that. You know what I mean? Because that's what we have. My generation is more socially adapted, and because we didn't have this form of, I mean, my son told me that he asked a girl that goes to the same school as him on a date on Instagram and had never talked to her face before. You know what I mean? So I don't think I would trade the bundle of knowledge for just my social, you know, like skills that I learned by having to actually talk to people.
Well, I wouldn't either. Never. But I mean, for me, I kind of triangulate with data, you know? So in other words, it's like, okay, I get this phone. I mean, you know, I mean, I look something up and then I have an experience with somebody. I mean, I'm not
talking about right now. I'm talking about when we were younger. We
right.
didn't have these.
Right.
Yeah, not now. It's a completely different ballgame. But back then, I wouldn't have traded this for the experience that I got of having to talk to people face to face. You know what I mean?
Right.
I wouldn't trade the knowledge that you get from this for that.
So this is better or
no? No. I would not trade this.
Okay, for what you had, right. Yes. Yeah, so even if you could take a phone back with you and have the advantage.
And be a hermit and not talk to people face to face. And that's not everybody, but it is. There is a lot of social ineptness in our culture today, very much so, especially the younger generation.
Yes. Well, and I think that, I mean, so this is kind of interesting topic, and that is, I think that, so then the phone, though, or the information, which we know is not always unbiased, becomes this mark. You know, I mean, and so crutch, you can, so somebody who is knows nothing about a topic can do a single query and go, oh, that's bad, and they've made up their mind. Yeah. I mean, do you see that happening with young people?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely happens. And the thing is that you can't just click on Wikipedia or do what the little Google excerpt is at the top.
Right.
You should go to some trusted sources and then find multiple ones and see if they agree, disagree, and check that. So it's kind of like how you're talking about triangulating. You need to be like, you need to go to like the normal one, Wikipedia, to get the basic understanding of the background, and then you need to go to the other sources that are like maybe one's a little bit more left, maybe one's a little bit more right, and figure out what they each say, because there's three sides to a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's yours, mine, and the truth.
But there's very few people that will go to that much effort.
And that's also fair.
But there's also a reason why you can't cite Wikipedia in a college research paper.
Right.
Because it's full of shit.
Because anybody can edit it.
Anybody or their dog. I mean, I saw a thing. There's a video game I like to play, Diablo. It came out a while back. And somebody changed the sales to 666 million or something like that. You know what I mean? On their Wikipedia page.
Right.
And there's no way it just happened to sell $666 million and it's called Diablo. You know what I mean? There's a reason why you can't cite Wikipedia. It's not exactly trustworthy, right?
So here's a question about young folks. Mm-hmm. Young folks. Man, I sound ancient saying that. Young people. So do you think that knowing your experience, and you guys tend, I mean, you're Republicans, you're young Republicans, but do you think that since you're able to think outside of your own experience or your own party, do you think that, are you able to find common ground with young liberals, young Democrats, I don't know, whatever that, I mean, do you think that young people are able to find common ground with other young people easier than what the old established parties people are? Do you understand that question?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let you go first, Calvin. This time.
Oh, okay. Call me out.
Yeah.
I think young people would tend to skew to be able to solve issues more. What we've seen a lot is this generation that we're in now is the first generation that is going to have less wealth than their parents, right? And so a lot of young people are seeing the issues of today and saying they want to fix it. And that is really a big tie between this generation that we all have, is we're like, guys, the system a lot of times is not working for us. So how do we fix it? I don't have the answers for today, I'll be honest. But that's something that young people are talking about all the time. You've seen the Democratic Party a lot, especially on the federal level, where they're like, let's change this, let's overhaul this, da 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 da. And while I'm not saying I at all advocate for any of those, they're bringing up an issue that I think is valid to bring up. So, I don't know. Isaac, you want to add on to that?
I don't think it's fair for me to say it's easier for our generation to get along with students or for me to get along with others who might not share my values, because I've met people who, you know, we're very different in our values and they won't ever talk to me. You know, I don't talk to them. So I won't say that. But an experience that I've had that really opened my eyes is actually when I joined the choir at Eastern Oregon University, because theater kids tend to be a little more left-leaning, and I'm very Republican, and I'm the only ag kid in the choir right now, and it was very separating, and at first, a lot of the students there who knew about my values, they kind of stayed away from me for a little bit, and I kind of stayed away from them, so I'm just as guilty, but now almost all those people and I, all of the members in choir, we're all great friends. We hang out all the time, even though they might have voted for someone I would never vote for, and I vote for someone they might never vote for. And I think that's the message that Calvin and I definitely wanted to share is, hey, just because we don't vote for the same person does not mean we can't have a beer afterwards. Right. You know what I'm saying? And that was a huge eye-opening experience for me because I realized how close-minded I was for a short time period there. I was like, oh, if you are a leftist, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to get to know you at all. And then I got to meet some of these people, and I'm like, wow, we really are very similar. We just vote differently. And, you know, once again, I can't say that our generation does a better job than yours because there's students who won't ever accept other students' views and the students who do. So I think you can, and I think you can't at the same time.
So the issues with the political landscape, whatever that might mean, I mean, you pick one, and nothing is easy to solve, you know. And nothing turns on a dime. I mean, there's no switch that you can flip that fixes homelessness. There's no, or mental illness, or Measure 110, or, I mean, just doesn't matter. I mean, pick a topic. There is nothing. I don't know. Does that, I mean, there are times for me that I'm involved in the commissioner race, but I have no desire to be involved in the state level or anywhere else. I mean, as far as from a political leadership standpoint, because it's just a mess and there's not really any, I mean, how do you feel about that? Are there times that you guys ever feel like, well, we're involved in this, you're at the very beginning of this process. Mm-hmm. Where's the hope, man? I mean, yeah, I mean, you guys are both in your early 20s. Do you really think you can make any difference? And how do you feel about that? You go first, Isaac.
Absolutely. I believe the average age of a worker in Washington, D.C. is 26.
Really?
Young people run D.C. Young people run Salem. I've been interning for Representative Levy for the past year, and it's a lot of people like to say that every single legislature is fighting each other, but 90% of the legislation passed is all unanimous. Mm. And then the media just tends to point out that 10% that Democrats and Republicans disagree on. So it's definitely young people that are getting stuff done because they're doing all the dirty work, trust me. the writing the bills, the analyzing them and doing the lobbying, that's all young people. So absolutely, I think young people that are involved can get a lot done. And I hate it when young voters tell me, oh, it doesn't matter if I vote. You know, they're an old person. The old people are going to vote in whoever they want. I'm like, there's a lot of us. If you guys all start voting, we might get some younger people in there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But hasn't that been the case forever? I mean, all the old people are the people that are voted in and the young people work. I mean, it's been like that for years. You know what I mean? Like, so what changes? Like, I mean, the people that are working in D.C. that are young aren't the ones that are making the decisions. They're doing the dirty work. You know what I mean? So how does that change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. But I mean, I feel like that's just how our economic structure is. I mean, young people start off and they work. And then, I mean, it's just like the same thing in business. I mean, you start off small in the business, you work up from the mailroom or whatever, and then if you're good, then you eventually become the top guy. So CEO, or you're the legislator, or you're the senator, or So I'd say that. But going back to your earlier question, my thing is that, well, we might not be able to change it now, but I have to have hope that we have to be able to change it. I had a really good conversation with a friend who drove up, and we're like, we both want to be business owners. With a friend who drove up.
Okay.
And we're like, we both want to be business owners in the future, and we're like, why do we want to stay in Oregon? It's really tough to do that. The taxes is killer. We're talking about all the problems of this state, and we're driving around the Grand Ronde Valley, and I'm like, you know why I'm going to stay here? Look around. Look at Mount Emily. Look at Mount Harris. Just, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful day, and I'm like, Oregon has so much potential, and we need to be able to fix. I mean, just everyone, you guys think to yourselves, if the state was just run a little better, how cool could this place be?
Yeah.
I mean, like bad news. So Dutch Bros, everyone knows Dutch Bros, started here in Oregon, Grants Pass. They're moving their corporate headquarters to Phoenix. What are some other ones that I've just left? I can think of it. Salt and Sugar, which is a local ice cream chain in the valley, is leaving their corporate headquarters to Texas. What was the other big one that just happened?
I can't think of
it. But there's a lot of Oregon businesses that are like uprooting and leaving just because the state's not very well run. It's a serious problem that we see. I mean, I even saw it in Mitchell. We had a gunsmith shop in Spray, Oregon. And they left Indiana because it was just too hard to be a business owner in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I think we need to change. And so while I don't think I can change it today or tomorrow, in the future, I have to have the hope that we can change it.
Do you think that anybody in Salem cares that that's happening? Are they aware, and do they care?
I think they do. I think Republicans and Democrats both have the same end goal, and that's to make America great. The thing is that they have different ways on how to do it. And so that's my short answer. I think I just saw Isaac make a sigh, so I'm not sure if he's going to agree or disagree, but what are your thoughts, Isaac?
I don't want to speak on the mindsets of every legislator in Salem. There's some I think care, there's some I think are there just to be there, but, you know, that it depends on the legislator, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So what's the next step for you guys? Is that where you want to, I mean, do you want to spend some time in the trenches doing stuff in Salem?
Yes, I definitely want to, and I've definitely learned working with Representative Levy that I would more enjoy being someone who's like a chief of staff or a policy analyst for a politician, because I get to do all the fun work but never have to put my name on it and get all the public press scrutiny.
Oh,
you know, you don't get your life looked into. Like,
yeah.
It, I'm sure you've learned as a candidate yourself that your entire life is under a microscope, and I'd rather be the person behind the guy who's being microscoped doing all the dirty work, because I get to do what I love and make a difference and not be scrutinized for everything that's being done. So I definitely am hoping to get a job in Salem.
Yeah.
Especially because I want to do good work for my community here.
Yeah. What do you think, Calvin?
Yeah, I feel very similar. I think moving to Salem right after graduation, because I graduate this June, would be really cool. Going and doing some of that good work for this community. I mean, I've lived in Oregon since I was 10. I love this state. And being able to really help our constituents and get stuff done for them is incredibly valuable to me as a person. So that's where I think I'm going to go after this. But we'll see. There's other opportunities. So, yeah, we'll see.
Not to be a negative Nancy, but you're not going to love this state much after you live in Salem for a while.
And that's valid. That's valid.
I mean, I live there. I know.
Believe me, I've lived out in the valley my entire life, and just a few times we visit Salem, I'm like, Calvin, I could not imagine living here.
See, guys, okay, my official proposal today, we move the capital to La Grande. Can we just
You should move to Dallas, or one of the outlying, Philomath, somewhere.
Oh,
somewhere,
okay.
Dallas is very much like La Grande. Mm. Western Oregon University is like 8 miles away in Monmouth.
Oh, okay.
It's farming, conservative. It's very much like La Grande, but over there, mm-hmm. in the middle of the, you know, the Willamette Valley. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
That's the only way I survived was living there. There's no way I would have been able to make it living in Salem. No way.
Okay, so Andy, who we met, one of the young Republicans. Andy, what's his last name?
Huey,
okay. And then Alex is watching online. Both of them have like written bills that have like gotten through, mm-hmm. which is the opposite of what you just said, of like having your name on something in the scrutiny. I mean, tell me how you feel. How do you put those two worlds together?
My understanding of this is, I might totally be wrong
right.
here, and but my understanding is when Andy and Alex say they write bills, they do write them, but then I believe the legislators sponsor them.
They put their name on
it. They put their name on it, because
okay.
I think the legislator has to sponsor the bill for it to even be considered. I know you can submit bills, but I think it has to be like, for instance, Representative Levy most likely is the person who sponsored those bills to go forward.
So have you written bills before? Have you guys flirted with that? Or I mean, what's involved in that? I should have asked Alex that, but... Mm-hmm.
I'm still learning all that's involved in writing bills. I'm not very proficient in it. It's still an area that I'm learning about. I've analyzed a lot of bills, looked into their effects, and had to do that and for a while, but I've never gone through the writing process. That's the next step.
Right, and same here. I haven't written any bills, but I've analyzed a lot and figured out what's best, what's worst, who are all the stakeholders involved and stuff like that, and how does it affect Eastern Oregon University, which is what I've done it for with Andy and Isaac. That's where we've done quite a few, is for the student government, being like, okay, how's this bill going to affect us? How's it going to affect students? How's it going to affect the institution? How's it going to affect La Grande?
Yeah.
And then should we go to Salem and talk about it and advocate for that bill? But yeah, I've never written any. So
I think there needs to be a bill, a law passed that says that bills have to be written in English instead of politician.
Politician.
Yeah, it's like it's like looking at affidavits, right, court affidavits. Yeah, right. You're like, what the? Yeah, well, like, speak English to me. I don't want to waste all day looking up all these words and talking to people trying to figure out what this says. Give it to me in English.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the Oregon state level, each one has to be written at an eighth grade reading level.
I'm not talking about reading. I mean, of course, an eighth grader can read all kinds of words. It's about knowing the jargon. You know what I mean? Use you know, like, they use these replacement words that are intended to confuse people. Mm-hmm. They are. And it's not written for somebody to look at and truly understand. You know what I mean? It's basically made in a sense to, like, confuse people. Because if you're writing the bill and you want people to vote for it, you're going to do everything you can to get those people that are swaying the other way to come this way. So, including manipulation with words. And that's kind of how I feel. Like, what? Let's make these things just cut and dry, the same across the board, so everybody understands. Like, that's my thing.
Yeah. So, what happens at a national level when there's like an 800-page bill? I mean, are they hiding crap in there, or is that really what it takes? I mean, maybe you guys haven't gotten into that far. You know,
I've yet to read a 800-page bill. I'll admit that.
I'll be honest. I don't read the 800-page bill either. Yeah. I'm a busy college student. However, if you're making a bill for the whole country, there's a lot of stuff going on in the United States of America.
Right.
And if you're trying to make it for everyone, like regulations on everything, that's the problem. And it's a lot of these omnibus bills that include a lot. I mean, we just saw it pass out of the House recently. There's like a bill that includes funding for Ukraine, Israel. Is there another major conflict going on right now?
I think those are the two, and
the border, the southern border.
Right. Okay.
Funding for all three of those, which are three very different conflicts. But if you're going to put all of those in one bill, it's going to be a long bill. And then there's going to be other stuff going in on it. Like, what are you allowed to buy? How are you supposed to allocate that money? Who's going to allocate the money? And so you have, of course, a lot of this manipulative jargon that we were talking about earlier, but. Mm-hmm. And then they stretch it out. And then on the federal level, there's no eighth grade reading level requirement.
Alex commented that is
writing in political.
On both of those. Alex said, that's usually the case, responding to you guys. Sometimes bills have no sponsor to protect supportive legislators when something will be politically negative, but someone needs to at least carry the bill on the floor. Mm-hmm. But he also said Oregon's constitution requires state laws to be written simply and easy to understand. Well, that don't happen, Alex. I've looked at some of these bills, and it's not easy to understand.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Might be easy to understand to a politician or somebody...
Or somebody who's involved in the system.
Yeah, but it's like reading an affidavit from a judge. Like, try it sometime. Yeah. Pull a 30-page affidavit off of Oregon's website and read it, and tell me what you understand about it.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
Okay, so I'm going to switch totally here. Okay, so you guys... So you have been the student body president,
yes,
right? And your term is coming to an end.
Yep.
Okay.
So I've been president for this academic year. So from graduation of 23 to graduation of 24.
Okay. Is my term. And then Isaac, you were most recently elected.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll be replacing him.
All right. And so in the debate format that you prefer, I mean the debate that happened for Congressional District 29, right? This last, and there were four people in that. One of the things that you guys allowed was them to ask right questions for the other candidate.
Yes.
Which was a little spunky, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, given that format, let's say the two of you are running against each other.
Easy. I'm just kidding.
All right, okay, all right. And so now, Isaac, you go first. You get to ask a question of Calvin as your opponent.
Ooh.
Wow. I thought we said no curveballs.
Yeah, what happened there?
Yeah.
You're talking for like the student body government presidency?
Well, and you can make it vague if you want, or you can make it, but I mean, I guess the point is, you know, how do you guys, what do you differ? I mean, can you ask him a question that points out the differences on how you guys function on these two levels.
Oh, why are you ginger?
Shoot, yeah. That's a hard one.
Well, and, okay, so maybe we don't have to go there, but let's talk about why you chose that. I mean, that was a little bit of a brutal section.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was the point of that?
The point of it, not only was it to, for Calvin and I, we can't always think of the best questions for candidates.
Right.
So it's their opportunity to tell us what questions they are interested in and interested in hearing other candidates speak about. Mm-hmm. And after the debate, talking to some of the candidates, they appreciated that section.
Because they had an opportunity mm-hmm. to address the elephant in the room.
The elephants yes. in the room.
Okay.
And so, like, questions that might have, that Todd had, that Drotzman and Doherty and Andy all had, they loved that because it gave them an opportunity to address where they might be weak on in hopes of bringing that swing voter over to their side. And so that's kind of the thought process of bringing it in there, mm-hmm. is to ask them the hard questions so they have an opportunity to address it and hopefully change the voters' minds if that's the one issue voters are hesitant on supporting for.
Right.
Yeah, it does that, and it really clears the room and really makes sure that you know what each candidate is and what they stand for and their differences. And then number two, it's entertaining.
Yes.
And that was a big value that we had, was let's make sure the entertainment value is good because we want people to be able to sit down and watch the whole thing and be mm-hmm. able to look forward to something. And that was a big section that people were looking forward to, was those conversations, were the questions that they were asking each other. And so getting that made so that people watched it and were entertained as well, and so they could learn about these candidates, and so that retention stayed longer. I was looking at our online viewership for that day, and everyone who was online didn't leave, mm-hmm. which is unheard of in a live stream, right? People hop on and off of those. Our debate.
No, I was watching. It stayed pretty steady the entire time.
Yeah, it was pretty steady. Yeah.
Right.
It's hard to enjoy watching a bunch of people argue about policies. So having that in there does create that entertainment factor. And
right.
it was cool to hear a lot of the audience members say, oh, we could have listened to that for 3 hours. I'm like, I couldn't, but.
Yeah. Right, but how do you, you know, I mean, the potential of getting a totally inappropriate question.
Well, we vetted every single question. They had to send
right,
us the
but
questions.
Did you get any questions that were like, no, we can't push that one forward?
We did not.
Yeah.
They were all very cordial with each other, so that was nice. There was no slanderous questions.
Well, I mean, you could get incredibly personal, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and we told them up front that we weren't going to allow that. We said like the no ad hominem attacks or anything, like no personal attacks, just questions that are relevant to the race. If they're not relevant or appropriate, we're going to come back to you and be like, hey, please submit another question. We're not willing
okay.
to ask this.
Because I'm not sure. I mean, because you're going to do one in the commissioner once it's down to two, I think. That's what you
hopefully,
had, you had mentioned that. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and if I'm in that and if that comes up, then I don't know that I want to participate in that question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I would have to really think about that because I don't know. It's just not. That's not the way I like to function. I mean, you guys know me pretty well. We've been through quite a conversation. But I mean, I guess I can see there certainly is the advantage of being able to address if a candidate has something out there mm-hmm. that they really need to address, then and you could see the candidates lean into that. Mm-hmm. You know, as it came up, they would be like, "Thank you for asking this. I want to be able to address
yes.
this." Yeah. So, interesting. Did you like how that turned out?
The final product of the debate, I was very happy.
I was very, very happy.
Is there anything that you would have changed going back, thinking about it?
The one criticism I got from people was the rebuttals.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard to manage rebuttals in a sense that we have a time schedule for every round. And the candidates all got to rebut at least once for
right.
every single round. But I think what the viewers didn't see is they didn't think it was like a perfect, like, outline of rebuttals. Which my thought is the whole purpose of rebuttals is supposed to be at random. The candidates
right.
aren't going to know when another candidate wants to rebut that topic. But so we'd probably work on that a little bit.
Well, and the rebuts with four people can be a little messy.
Mm-hmm.
If it's down to two, then I mean that makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean it's just a little bit more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And that
yes.
was the first debate that we've also hosted with more than two candidates where rebuttals were allowed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so having the four candidates and figuring that process out kind of on the fly. I mean, we talked to the candidates beforehand, tried to come to, or we came to an understanding, but still it's, you're on live TV. I mean, you guys know that being on live TV can be challenging once in a while. And so
how do you keep rebuts from just turning into a argument?
It's nerve-wracking to do, but there's times where the candidates wanted to keep talking and I had to be like,
no, we're done.
Bang my gavel and be like, sorry guys, we're moving on to the next topic. So you got to have kind of some thick skin to be like, no more talking guys, we're moving on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Well, for anybody who wants to see the debate, it's on YouTube. Yep. There still is a link for it on our Facebook page, so people can go to our Facebook page and find that and get to it. And you guys did a great job. And, you know, thanks for what you do. I mean, I'm excited for you guys. You know, maybe, you know, 10 years from now, one of you guys will be in the state house and I can still have your cell number and call you for like, hey, what's going on there? Although that would be a little unlike me. But so, yeah, no, thanks. Thanks a bunch, guys.
Of course. No, thank you for having us.
It's been great.
Really appreciate it. All right, man. You want to get us out of here?
I think they found the dog's owner.
Oh, good.
Because the girl came to the window and was like, and my phone has been blowing up. So I think they might have found the dog owner, hopefully. On this day, which is April 23rd, 1516, Duke Wilhelm of Bavaria endorses the German beer purity law and adds to it the standards for sale for beer. And that includes that beer is only brewed from three ingredients, water, malt, and hops. And that's crazy because that carried all the way through the monk. You know, that's been a thing all the way since the monks back in the old days. They'd have to they took beer from somewhere in Asia, I think, and took it all the way to Europe. And it took so long that the beer went bad on the way. And that's how a certain kind of beer was born.
Oh, really?
It took so long to get there. 1789, President-elected George Washington moves into the Franklin House, which is the first official residence of a U.S. president. 1972, Apollo 16 astronauts explore the moon's surface. 1992, the first McDonald's opens in China. That's crazy. You know, I've talked to a couple foreign people, actually, that have had McDonald's here and in their own country. So one guy, Mexico, says McDonald's in Mexico is way better than McDonald's here.
Interesting.
They have different laws around what they can add to food. And he said McDonald's in Mexico would blow your mind compared to here.
Huh.
I've never been to a McDonald's in Mexico. I've been to Senor Frogs and places like that, but never.
Interesting.
No McDonald's. 2005, YouTube's co-founder Jawad Karim uploads the first video to YouTube, which was called Me at the Zoo, showing him in front of two elephants at the San Diego Zoo. It's crazy. It's not even close to the number one watched video. It only has 311 million views. But that's still a lot. That's a lot of views.
Yeah.
On this day, the number one movie in America in 1994 is Bad Girls, Drew Barrymore. And then this quote comes from Bill Murray. And it says, whatever you do, give it 100% unless you're giving blood. Right? You'd be in trouble. So whatever you do, always give 100% unless you're donating blood. That's it.
All right. Hey, thank you guys.
Thank you.
We haven't talked about it, but are we gonna do an election night show on the 21st? Is that you guys have any interest in that?
I'd be definitely.
I'm definitely interested.
Yeah.
I need to check my schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. I won't be in the mindset to direct it, but I'll...
On the 21st of May?
Yeah.
We should... I mean, wouldn't we want to wait to do an election show until the actual,
Well, I mean, we could do... I mean, we could kind of do an election show light, you know what I mean?
For the primary.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have to be, you know... I mean, because those do tend to be a lot of work, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think people are used to finding the results here. So, and maybe Alex could throw in on that. The three of you could kind of.
Since Alex is best on the best side of Oregon.
Yeah.
Over here.
That's right.
Yes.
All right. Well, we can talk more about that. So, thank you guys. Do you want to talk about the Thursday show?
I mean, I pretty much have it confirmed. We're going to have local, you guys, You'd have to be a little older to know him. He's played guitar for Casey Musgraves. Mm-hmm. He's currently the piano player for the band The Fray. And he's a LeGrand native. Kai Welch is going to join us on Thursday. And that'll be kind of cool. It'll be exciting. He's been nominated for many Grammys. He's pretty well known in the band circle in Nashville. And he just got back from Australia. And we've been in contact for a few years. He's a friend of mine. And just trying to find the right time for him to get on here has been kind of a challenge. But I think we're going to have him Thursday.
Yeah, he'll be in remote. And so that'll be...
Yep.
If all goes well, we'll be here for that. All right. Thanks so much. We'll see you then.